Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Kiseki Cast. I'm your host, Tyler, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Josh.
Hey.
And it's been a minute, maybe not as long as some of our previous breaks. What have you been doing for the last
It's less than a year, I think.
Less than a year, just a couple months, not quite six. But what have you been doing since then?
Actually, you know what? This started as a joke between me and a friend, but I started to learn how to code a visual novel. And I'm actually doing two right now. One is a fan game, a dating sim for Ace Attorney. That's the joke part. So we're doing a dating sim for Ace Attorney. And then one visual novel that is inspired by this TV show Survivor. Yes, it's still on, and Tyler knows that I'm still obsessed with it. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. And it's actually pretty easier than what I've expected in, like, making a visual novel.
Oh. So there, I've mentioned before I travel for Mario Kart 64 tournaments, and I'm going to be scaling back a little bit because I'm getting sick of driving as far as I've been driving. But one of the guys that hosts the one that I go to in Ohio is out for Survivor. If he gets on Survivor,
no way!
Yeah, if he gets on Survivor, like, I'll definitely be following that season.
That's amazing.
Find out in like 2 or 3 weeks, I think. I think that's what he said.
Oh gosh!
So
I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm. He's definitely got the like outgoing personality that can be like the center of attention, but he's like super friendly. And really, like, mm-hmm. encouraging. So I feel like that might be something people would want to have on TV. But at the same time, mm-hmm. a lot of times they like personalities that butt heads, you know?
So. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, what...
Dude, that's amazing.
What, so you've just been working on stuff? Have you been playing anything?
Well, aside from, like, my gacha obsessions, I've been playing... I've been playing Trails to Azure again. Like, for the first time since I've played it a few years ago, so I've got that going for me. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I guess that's it.
I definitely played Trails to Azure when it came out on Switch, because I'm, like, such a big Switch fan. Loved it. Actually got to play the proper translation. Made me appreciate the game a lot more, even though I already really liked it. It was already, like, probably second in my games. Definitely solidified it there. But it's funny we were talking about visual novels. I was actually playing a part of a fan-translated game of a visual novel. It's a Haruhi Suzumiya game. And it's actually pretty fun if you know the show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what I've been playing.
I made sure to like play Azure before Reverie comes out.
I definitely wanted to play it before it came out too. Just
like I forced myself, even though I'm still recovering from Cold Steel 4 like 3 years ago.
That was definitely one I spent the most time on. Yeah, it was definitely the longest one mm-hmm. for sure. And that should bring us to our guest for today. At one time, his favorite game was Cold Steel 4. That is February Knight.
Hey, y'all, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Today's topic is Laura Arcade, and you are Laura S. Arcade. I'm so sorry. And you are probably the biggest Laura fan that I know, so we had to ask you on.
I appreciate it. Happy to be here. Happy to help represent for all my fellow Laura enjoyers.
So I guess let's just jump into some of the basic facts of Laura. Now, she's kind of the stereotypical JRPG character age when we first meet her in Cold Steel 1, because she's 17. But one of the things that stood out to me first about her is that she is, not only is she really like polite and everything, but she is the only character that has an S-craft at the beginning of Cold Steel 1, I believe.
I think so.
I didn't even remember that. Wow. Yeah.
It's funny that she would be, because S-Craft is maybe the most powerful S-Craft in Cold Steel 1, and they give it to you right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
So, what was some of the first impressions that you had of Laura when you first meet her walking into Orr's military academy for the first time, Feb?
Well, in the first scene when they, you know, you first see her introduced in the game, you see her, you know, rolling in that limousine, and her butler. Oh man, I forgot his name. Was, you know, helping her out, and she seemed. At first, you'd think that she's posh, but now she seems like a, you know, really genuinely, like, non-stuck-up noble. And I just love her design, like, through and through. I love the blue hair, the ponytail, and her huge-ass sword. Like, she's not just a... she's not a anything but a damsel. She's a mm-hmm. strong character, a strong woman. And... when you see how Machias kind of is a little bit intimidated by her when he runs into the girls in the what is it called, the orienteering exercise, it just goes to show, like, he was harping on nobles, and she's like, well, if you have a problem with me, you know. And it was pretty funny to watch that scene. So yeah, I really like how she shows up, and I like her personality. Yeah.
Going back to what Feb said about her design, it is kind of like, I guess it didn't like stick out that much to me because she looked simpler than the rest of old Class 7. But you know, when she whipped out her sword, I was like, oh. Yeah, that's going to be her defining feature, I think.
Actually, I always was a little bit disappointed that the S in her name didn't stand for sword. Stands for Sandlot, you know, because Leanne Sandlot was the historical figure from that area. But it'd be, I don't know, funnier if it was sword.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, you're right. She has a little bit of a simple design, but I kind of like that. It kind of reflects her character in general because she's really straightforward. She doesn't really, like, give you a whole lot of BS,
right.
And she's, you know, she's reliable, she's strong, and one of the things that stands out compared to some of the other nobles that we meet, like Eusis at first, is she's really respectful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, of course, she has the powerful noble dad in Victor, who we meet...
Who also has a big
sword. Who also has a big sword, and we meet him in Cold Steel 1, so we meet him pretty early. When you go to visit LeGram. That one, I don't think Sarah is on that, right? Because Toval's there.
Yeah.
Right. And that's correct.
Sarah has such a thing for older men. She just kind of... Doesn't she, like...
Oh, I think she swoons at Victor.
Isn't she, like, sad that she couldn't go or something?
I actually don't remember if Sarah and Victor have met, like, before Cold Steel 3.
There's no way that she didn't meet him when she was a Bracer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
There weren't too many Bracers in Erebonia, and she was, like, such... It's with Toval.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You know, I actually forgot that Toval is, like, someone from LeGram.
Yep, they're buddies. So I would assume that they met up. Yeah, I wouldn't. She acts like she knows him very well. So
going back to her design, I think it's kind of strange that, like, her design is honestly pretty feminine, and it always felt kind of weird that they would give her a design like that, yet still make her a character that's supposed to be, like, super bad at, like, typical female things, like, you know, where she in I think Cold Steel 2, where she, like, breaks all the machines when they go to the... or all the appliances when they go to the store. It just seems kind of odd that they would give her that design and pair her with being bad at all of those things.
I think her being, you know, not, you know, well familiar, I guess, with appliances and, I guess, what you would typically, you know, associate in, like, that ladies would be familiar with, you know, doing those kind of, you know, operating those kind of machinery and fridges and stuff, and vacuum cleaners. she, it's I'm trying to think of the right word. It's very not something likable, but like not admirable either. It's endearing. Is that the right word? Endearing. Mm-hmm. It makes her very endearing to me. That she's so focused on her craft. She wants to be a great, good noble, kind to the people that live in her, town, and she'll kick people's asses quite handily, but when it comes to that stuff, she's has a little more trouble. It makes sense because she's probably got like maids or and butlers to do that kind of stuff for her and Victor, so she may not be as familiar with that stuff. She's been focused on her training. She's really focused on her training. I don't know. It I think it makes sense to me personally. I just like how she looks, and I think it fits a noble look.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
I guess I'll throw a question back to you then. What would you see about her change a bit to fit more of what you'd think since she's not, too familiar with appearance wise, she's not too familiar with, things like appliances and stuff. You think she'd look more, I don't know, less feminine or?
Well, it seems like they wanted to, like, a lot of her personality traits and things like that were not as much of a stereotypically feminine type thing. Mm-hmm. Yet they gave her the, like, boots and short skirt and long hair and all that, that it seemed like an odd pairing, and then you had someone who was supposed to be as feminine, like Angelica, who I don't think we ever see her wear a skirt, and maybe that was a conscious choice just for that specific character, and they wanted to keep. But I mean, she's a noble too. In fact, she's one of the four. She's in one of the four great houses, so it's like a more prominent position. So I don't really have an answer for how you'd change that, because I actually really like her design. It just seems like odd juxtaposition with those two things.
Gotcha.
I got called out by a mm-hmm. friend once for liking characters of blue hair and golden eyes. And I hadn't realized.
Like who?
Hadn't realized that was a thing. Oh, so there's a character named Plakia that is from Crest of the Stars. There was another character there's like a character that looks a lot like Plakia from a Fire Emblem game, and Laura, and I think there was another character that had blue hair and gold eyes from Trails that I can't think of. Does Tio have golden eyes?
I think so. I actually thought of Chloe first.
Oh.
So
I don't recall.
And someone called like, oh, you must really like characters that have blue hair and gold eyes. And I was like, I had never noticed that before, but okay, I guess that tracks because there are a bunch of characters that were like that.
I'm trying to think of the blue haired like Fire Emblem character that you're talking about, but I'll get back to it eventually.
She was from Echoes. She's a flyer.
I'm trying to think, but we'll get back to it.
She's like an absolute glass cannon. Like every time I almost forget about her sometimes because I liked her, because my favorite class is anything that can fly, and she just died constantly. And I'm also really bad at Fire Emblem. Like, I'm better now, but I was really bad when I played that game. So going back to Steel 1, some of the other things that I think of when I think of how she comes or is the game is she's very thoughtful and deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
Like Machias hates all nobles and everything, and she just kind of lets him be. It's hard to provoke her, and it actually takes later in the game, like not chapter because they don't have chapters in Cold Steel 1, but later on when she has her disagreement with Fee, that's like the only time she really like has anyone really get under her skin.
I think that was a growth moment for her too. Like, she learned to accept that, not everybody is as passionate at the certain thing that they do, that they're committed to. So a little bit of growth there for her. There's some other, once we get to CS2, probably some of my favorite sequence in there. That's the first time I saw some growth on her end.
Okay. So here's a question for you guys. Like, I get why she kind of disapproves of the Jaeger lifestyle. Once she starts, she's very straightforward and she doesn't like to, she doesn't want to let things sit and fester for a while. So she really like brings it to Fee pretty early on. But honestly, it's kind of like the only time that she ever lets something really get to her. And you said it was a growth moment. It really sets her up to be a strong character who's going to be known as someone that really confronts stuff head on as we move forward, someone that we can rely on, someone that's not going to ignore something and everything like that. And I like that it's early on because
Yes. Then
it's someone that we can rely on Laura from here on
Absolutely.
Out. I guess that wasn't really a question. that's kind of all I have for Cold Steel 1. She doesn't really have a whole lot. Like, going through and making my notes, it was actually interesting to see how much of a supporting character she was compared to other ones.
I think it makes sense that she's a good swimmer, like the best in the class, pretty much. She's in a swimming club, and she's pretty much the one that everybody's like, oh boy, here we go. She's going to be whoever's going up against her is going to lose, but it makes sense because she lives on the lake, and her and her dad, trained as part of their training, go swimming in the lake, Lake Ebel.
Yeah, I forgot about that, but I did watch some of the bonding events recently. And I think it's funny that she asks Reen to like time her. He's mad that he's looking at her.
Oh yeah! Wow. Okay, I remember that now. Yeah, I was a little bit of soon.
How else is he gonna do it?
Right. Another thing I recalled is that at the festival, when you take her to the Mishy thing, you learn she loves Mishy, and I think that's so adorable. Mm-hmm. And it puts her in the same club with Tio and who was the other one that was into Mishy aside from Tio and Laura?
Yuna.
There was someone posted a comic on Reddit recently about this, actually.
Yeah, I could have swore I saw one. I'm trying to remember who the third person was. I can't believe I forgot.
There was someone from Kuro, I think, too.
Oh, then it was Reset. Okay.
I've never played Kuro yet.
Hey, you got something special waiting for you.
In Cold Steel 2, we first encounter her in her hometown of Legram. I believe that she's fighting monsters with Emma in the castle. And Feb, that is one of your favorite locations in Trails, isn't it?
Oh, I love it. I love the castle. Not only because it's, the magical nature of it, the supernatural nature of it. The fact that it was the castle that was Leanne Zanlot's castle, pretty much, and I like the soundtrack that plays in there so much. Castle of the Saint, it's a great soundtrack, and I could listen to that for hours and never get sick of it, for sure.
Anything with like fogs and castles is a win for me.
The mystical feel of that track is really, really good. It's definitely one that I feel like the first time I played Cold Steel, I don't remember. Like, I liked it. I don't remember seeking out a 30-minute extended version on YouTube or something like that, but I definitely do now. I really like that track. It's really
it's really, really helps, especially when you go in CS1 in there in CS1 to clear the fog, and you at nighttime, because in CS2 it's daytime when you go there. I like it better at night personally, just because it adds to the whole, when the castle's glowing, and it's just, I don't know, it's something special. It just fits very well.
Just let the high school kids go into the dark castle in the middle of the night.
Yeah, indeed.
Yep. At one point, Laura and Reen are talking about what the point of using a sword is in modern day high tech war when there's soldats and all that stuff. And it's interesting because I think that shows Laura questioning the role that like her and her family might face in the future of Erebonia, as nobles. What did you think about that, Feb?
I didn't catch that. I remember them talking about the. I remember Laura getting a little bit frustrated with Reem when he was doubting himself. He wasn't CS1 though. I don't recall this part in CS2. It's been a while since I played CS2. I'm at the and CS1. I got to play these both. But I mean, it's
good thing they're not like 60 hours long.
Exactly. Right. Yes, that I didn't notice that, actually. I don't call that Valor.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because like it shows that she is, while she has all that tradition of her family, that is not something that she's like stuck in, despite the fact that she like heavily identifies with that sort of thing, and the whole S in her name is for a great warrior that was from centuries ago. Still like looking for what her family can do and the impact that they can have and the role that they play. I just think it's really cool that at least we see her questioning that. You know, she's not a main character, so we don't see heavy development or anything, but it's at least something that we know that she's thinking about. And she actually says that, you know, it's something that they can find together with Class 7, which I love the idea of Class 7. I think I've said this a couple times, but I can't imagine a group of such capable, well-connected, well-positioned, well-known people that all are really close and trust each other. Like, basically, coming of age all at the same time in a country like that. Like, that would be an insane generation of people to, like, lead the nation.
It's all thanks to Oliver, you know?
It's all thanks to Oliver.
So, the scene where we, or the scenes after when we're about to leave Legram in CS2 at the beginning of the game, after we've gone to the castle, done all that stuff, remember when, and you know her dad's not present, right? He's gone somewhere. And remember when we're looking outside and we see these ships start flying in?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who's aboard?
Aurelia.
So, I liked how Laura kind of, you know, filled in that sequence, in her dad's, filled in for her dad essentially, and stood stood in her castle and welcomed them in, while at the same time she was containing her nerves and nervousness, like crazy, because she could sense that these two guys, Bardias and Aurelia, were immensely strong. You remember how like the rest of the Class 7's like behind that door across the hall from her, like. Like, holy crap, those guys are strong. And then when they leave, the anxiety was so strong that she fell down to the floor on her knees when she was like, whew, oh my goodness. Like, she was really afraid about that. And I feel like that was just quite a moment for her, you know, showing that she's a badass, and she knows that she feels responsible, you know, to fill in for her dad, to keep her nobility part going, and her city, you know, her town relies on her family, keep that going. But at the same time, you see a little bit of a weakness there, where she's, you know, a little bit of potential for growth, where she's intimidated and there's room for growth in her, that she's eventually going to need to make sure that she trains to get to that level, which we see happens later on in the arc. But I really like that scene a lot.
On top of that, like, basically, Class 7 is kind of a bunch of outlaws at the time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because
Aurelia and Bardias are both still the noble faction.
Yep.
And, like, Laura's kind of on thin ice, you know? Like, I believe Victor was trying to not play up either side. So,
yep.
You know, everyone's hiding in the other room trying to be like, oh gosh, like, don't get us arrested or something like that.
Exactly.
And so she's not just stepping in for her dad, but she's like kind of covering for the whole crew.
Yep. And she stood up there, and just one of those few growth moments for a character that isn't one of the main focus characters.
Yeah, that's true. And standing up to a woman whose sword is even bigger than hers.
Oh yeah. He knows, not only does he know the Arsade school, but also the what is it, the 100 Vander style as well.
Yeah, the Vander style. Yeah. At the end of Cold Steel 2, I think it's kind of weird that pretty much everybody leaves Thors
yep.
without graduating. they're just like, ah, yep, I'm leaving early because I have this going on or I have that going on. Like, she decides to leave so that she can, like, continue training in the Arsade School of Swordsmanship at the end. And, like, yeah, she goes on in later games to be, like, a master and travels around and teaches people. But, like, she didn't graduate. What was the point of going to this school for, like, 1 year and there's a civil war that interrupted it? And kind of everyone does that. Rin is actually left by himself and is, like, the only one to graduate, I think, from Class 7. Am I wrong in that?
It did seem odd to me as well that they just all left. And... yeah, it felt kind of like a, honestly, it felt like a hurried decision by the developers, to be honest with you. Like, oh, what should we do?
And like some of them, in hindsight, we can see, you know, like obviously Gaius goes off and like eventually he's going, he was probably training with, is it Barkov, the guy?
Barkhorn, I think?
Yeah, that's it. Like training with him, so like he's got, you know, stuff going on, and maybe Elisa had some stuff going on at her mom's company and everything, but like everybody just left the school. Like they didn't even actually graduate except Rin. Just seemed really weird to me.
I have a question for you. Did you see Laura's final bonding event in CS2?
Yeah, I mean, like I definitely saw all of her bonding events. What you got for me?
So in that bonding event, you really, a little bit, it hints to it also in CS1 as well, the final bonding event with her in CS1 as well, where they really, I think it's really cool and really important how Laura and Rin have the same passion, pretty much, for their craft with the sword.
Mm-hmm.
When Laura asks Rin, in one of the bonding events, I don't know if it's CS1 or CS2, how do you feel about the sword? When he says that it's, you know, it's an extension of his being, when she grins and smiles, like, you just, oh, I just love it. It's awesome. Man, oh, man. I found it odd, though. I got mad at, I don't know if it was Rin that said this, but, like, Laura asked him to come with her when he was going to go train with her dad, you know? And And Rin was like, no, you need to go on your own and grow on your own. I don't remember exactly how he said it. That's how what I got out of it. And I was like, what the hell, man?
This is like, it's just like from Seinfeld where he's like, coffee's not coffee.
I'm like, dude, go with your girl. Come on.
Coming up on Cold Steel 3 is where we see her final design change. She had a different design in Cold Steel 2 from what she had in Cold Steel 1. And, now, I'll let Josh wrap this up, because I think I know what he's going to say. But, Feb, which design did you like the best out of the three?
I really liked her CS2 design a lot. I thought it was really neat. But I felt like her CS3 and 4 design going forward was, like, the most mature look for her. And I felt like it was very, I think it was extremely fitting. Like, Rin said it himself. When she just popped up to save them when you first see her in the game in, I believe it was chapter 1, where, right there, like right on the foothills of, did I say that again?
They're in Parm, right?
Yeah, it was outside of Parm, right at that fence, that locked fence that leads to the path towards, the Hamel.
Mm-hmm.
And she shows up and Lorene's like, you've grown so dazzlingly beautiful. And I'm like, you're damn right she has.
Yeah, I probably think that the Cold Steel 3 and after design is my favorite, but they're all like just some of my, I think they're all fantastic. It's really hard to pick each one, but I know that Josh has some opinions on them.
Okay. Cold Steel 3 Laura is the definitive Laura version for me, I feel like. It's just, you know, like the stockings, the boots, the ascot, whatever it's called, like the one that Daphne and Fred has. Like, it's perfect. Absolute perfect. But I can't help but feel that Cold Steel 2 Laura felt like a concept design for how Laura got her design in Cold Steel 3. Like, it looks super similar.
I see a lot of the similarities.
Like, I actually looked both of them right now, and for someone who's not, like, you know, for someone who's not, like, into Trails or has played Trails, and you see Laura's Cold Steel 2 and Laura's Cold Steel 3 design, they wouldn't notice the difference firsthand. Like, it's super similar.
Yeah. I think that the real big difference is honestly just going from having, like, a skirt to having shorts. I think that might be, like, the biggest, like, and I guess the little, like, twirly at the end of her ponytail. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely...
I also feel like Laura is, like, the kind of person to wear shorts or pants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I agree.
That kind of goes back to what I was saying about her initial design in Cold Steel 1. I know that there was, like, a student dress code that apparently Angelica didn't follow. It definitely seemed like she would be the one girl that had the pants on in the CS1, but she didn't. And I still like her design. I still like the design. I like all of them. But yeah. So in Cold Steel 3, you know what she does. We mentioned it a little bit that she was traveling across Erebonia to gain more sword knowledge. And she was going around teaching as, like, a traveling teacher, since she had become a master in the Arsade school. She was actually teaching at the Vander school that was in Parm. She's the traveling teacher that was, like, subbing or whatever when we show up on the field study. And that's where we first meet her in the first chapter. I love the entry that she makes. I love anytime we see a character come back and make, like, their entrance, fantastic to me, because it's like, like, all the moments of that character that we've had from previous games, like, come to mind, even if it's some cheesy line that they say about, like, you know, not you just wait or something, like, I still love it.
That won't be necessary.
And they all have good hearing, too. Like, Laura was very far away. Like, for example, Laura's very far away from whatever, and then somehow she heard whatever, like, going on, whatever, like, Green's talking about.
Maybe she just has really good timing or really good planning. She's like, they're gonna last just long enough.
Yeah, to where she would get, like, the cool entrance.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if she'd be the type to do that, but I'm picturing it, though. I like how when she does that, though, and after we kicked their ass with her help, she and Reen hug, and the young class 7 are like blushing and stuff. Oh yeah, they're like, oh man.
It's definitely a lingering hug. Like, I know that they went through, like, some stuff in Cold Steel 1 and 2, but it's definitely like a lingering hug, which is probably even funnier if you were someone that, like, you know, Adios Forbid didn't like Laura and didn't do any of her bonding events. And so you're like, why is Reen even hugging her? Like, I didn't like this character. It's probably extra weird.
It's just an unfortunate result of, you know, the player choice.
they have to at least put in, like, a minimum amount of romance involved to every girl in Class 7 for Cold Steel 3, just in case.
Yeah, side note, I would have much preferred if there was one particular character that we could focus on, because I think that's why Estelle and Joshua's story in Sky was extra good, because you weren't like choosing between, you know, a bunch of people. But that's just a side note. Mm-hmm. So at the end of Cold Steel 2, in the Infernal Castle, one of the fights is taken over by Victor and is it Tovel? Victor and Tovel fight? And they have to fight McBurn. And don't really, you know, obviously we assume that they're going to win, but we don't really hear about it again until Cold Steel 3, when we find out that Laura feels a little bit guilty, because Victor actually came off with permanent damage from that fight. He had, like, some lung damage of some sort, and he felt like he lost, you know, half a step, or you want to phrase it, And she feels a little bit of guilt for that because she started that fight and she couldn't finish it. You know, Class 7 had other things that they had to do, and he came in to kind of save her and save everybody else too, to take over for it. And I think it's kind of interesting that we get to see that guilt come out a little bit.
She feels guilty because she feels like she's not able to, you know, fulfill her role yet. She needs to get stronger. I feel like that encouraged her to want to train even more, you know, at the end of CS2. That's something that I could see, you know, being a result.
Do you think it might have been one of the reasons that she left?
Yes.
Doors?
Yeah. Okay. I think so. Now that you mentioned that and I'm thinking about it a little bit more, it makes sense because she's like, I don't want to have to rely on my dad all the time. I'm going to have to eventually, you know, get to the point where she's in charge of the, you know, she's the main person with all the strength, representing the Arcade School. And, I could see she was disappointed in her skill level at that point.
Which is crazy because her, the domination courts, and she was doing 400,000 damage.
Oh yeah. So, especially season one. CS2. Oh my goodness.
I feel like she could have taken McBurn maybe by herself.
Oh yeah, dude, for sure. Another thing I want to mention, I don't know if you're planning to mention this, but I thought that the voice actress selection they did for her from Marisha Ray, I feel like Marisha Ray nailed it. Mm-hmm. I feel like she was a very good casting choice.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I feel like her voice added to it fit the noble, strong, growing woman.
Mm-hmm. It's very strong.
Well.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's a very strong, confident voice. That, you know, even though we do see Laura show little hints of lacking confidence, like what we were just saying with how she felt guilty,
right?
But like, she still takes that mantle of being a noble and sees it as being really important.
Yep.
There's one thing I kind of want to bring back to a little bit. About Laura, like, teaching swordsmanship, like, going around. So I wanted to ask y'all's opinion on this. How would you feel about Laura if she ended up as one of Reen's, like, co-worker in the branch, Thor's Branch Academy?
I mean, more Laura, I'm always down for that. But I don't know. I never even thought of that. I think it'd be pretty cool. And I think it actually would fit because she's now a substitute trainer for not only the Arcade School, but the Vander School too. I can see her really being able to help train. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see her being trained. I think it would fit really well.
It would be nice because I like her and I would like to see her more often. And I feel like a lot of what we do see of her in Cold Steel 3 kind of rehashed from Cold Steel 1 and 2. Like, a lot of her bonding events are kind of the same thing as Cold Steel 2, where she's like breaking something or she's texting in all caps. But like, it's cute, but it's kind of like, oh, we didn't see much growth out of this. It's, you know, it's kind of something we've already seen before. So it would have been nice to see her Cold Steel 3, but I can't remember who are some of the other characters that are in Cold Steel 3.
Yeah, since Cold Steel 3 is really more about like introducing and setting up new Class 7. A lot of the old Class 7 kind of, we didn't get too much growth with them. It was all focused on the new Class 7.
I was actually disappointed in all of Class 7 meets up in Bereahard at the old Bracer Guild ranch to like have a dinner party. I was kind of disappointed because I was really excited. It's the first time everyone has seen each other, you know, since Cold Steel 2.
Was that Bereahard?
It's Heimdall.
No, you're right. It's Heimdall. I was thinking
right?
Heimdall, and I said Bereahard. they meet in Heimdall, and they kind of don't have any interaction between Laura and Fee. And they don't even sit next to each other at the table. And, you know, in CS1, they're kind of quite inseparable, but they're definitely always together hanging out. And
right,
yeah, it felt like a dropped storyline for Laura.
It's unfortunate, but you got a point there.
I don't really have anything else to say about it except that I noticed it, and I think that I don't think that they even do anything really with it in Cold Steel 4. there might have been like one victory line, but right. it definitely seemed like something that they dropped, which is kind of weird because obviously they kept the Useless Machias stuff going, and I feel like that was just as important to their characters.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
There surely are a lot of like dropped storylines once Cold Steel 2 ended, so I feel like at some point some of the like the weaker ones, I guess, kind of was just swept away. Like, I can't even remember what like Machias' thing is outside of Useless. Although I will say, like, I wonder if what was the story arc with Laura once Cold Steel 3 arrived? Like, what was her main like a goal towards?
I mean, she's currently just she took the role of training substitute trainer, teacher, master, essentially, and she's going around helping with that and improving her skills at the same time, just constantly training and pushing herself. I don't know. I can't recall the overall goal. Like, she's pushing towards, or if there's like a certain focus for her. I can kind of see that being the same for a couple other old class 7 as well. There's not really like a focus for everybody, I don't think, at that point.
Yeah, I think she's just kind of going around training, getting better, improving her generic, you know, label to put everything that she's doing, but I don't think that there's a particular, you know, she's not learning another school of swordsmanship, I don't think. She might have picked up a couple of things if she was helping to teach at the Vander School, but I think the one chapter where you fight Aurelia and you fight, do you fight Aurelia and Victor at the same time?
Fight her with Laura and V too. I guess that's their only like interaction on Cold Steel 3, I think.
Yeah, that's true. They do fight in that one with Sarah and Reen. Even just that is just her showing that she's improving, getting better, and getting stronger.
Absolutely, you see her growth in that. She's still a little nervous, but at the same time, she's like, she puts her all in, no matter what. She always gives it her all.
And as the game ends, we see what should be a huge event in her dad dies, gets blasted out of the sky. And we don't get time to process that in Cold Steel 3 because it's like the climax of the game and like literally everything is going to Gehenna. But like when we get into Cold Steel 4, don't really focus on it at all.
When it happens, first off, she fell to her knees, like feeling awful. It makes sense. You see her reaction to it in CS3 there for CS3, was it a flashback?
It's in CS4. I can't recall. I think.
Okay. Or it could be both. And then in CS4, when you first go to Aaron Village, you go up the ladder, you can see her there, just totally, totally demoralized. It hit her hard. She's totally demoralized, along with, you know, many other, the old class 7 is totally demoralized. And it took Yuna. We maybe should have an episode on Yuna, by the way, because she's really cool. Especially in CS4. It took Yuna snapping her along with everybody else in old class 7 out of it to go get Reen back. For her to come out of it. But you can, when you talk to her, you see those lines that she says right there before that happens in the prologue. You can see how it hit her pretty hard. And then you can also see what happens later on in the game when they go to Mystic Core.
It does, but and obviously, like, I get from a plot standpoint, since he's surprised, not really dead, it would be pointless development for her to confront that type of thing. But it could have been seen as a way for her to out of his shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And to come a little bit less, a little bit maybe more confident and less reliant or less guilty about having to rely on him and everything, but we don't really get a chance to. When you talk to her in Erin Village, she just kind of says that she isn't quite ready to talk about it yet.
It really messed with her quite a bit. You can tell it's one of those rare moments where you most of the time when you see her, 99% of the time she's strong and strong willed, and that was like the only time I felt like I saw a little bit of like, what am I doing? You know, what's my purpose anymore? Kind of thing. I feel like she said a little bit more than that. I gotta watch that again. But I remember her being quite impactful.
Yeah, I mean, she says that she feels weak, and you know, it hit her hard. She kind of was still doubting that she could live up to who he was. And obviously, like I said, he's not really dead, so there's only so much they can do.
Right.
But I did think that maybe she deserved a little bit more than a voiced optional
line.
Next conversation. Yeah.
She deserves a lot more than what she got. Oh, yeah.
It definitely felt like a missed opportunity for Laura to get like more character development.
There's many chances, CS2, CS3, where they could have really gone ham with that.
So when we eventually encounter Victor and we have to fight him, there's something that it's not really so much about Laura, but it's something that I've never quite understood about some of the Cold Steel 4 stuff. So the masks that certain characters wear, like Angelica has one and Victor gets one, they say that they are doing things like out of their own, they're just doing it on their own, that they're really those people. But like, they lead you to believe that they're not being controlled, but it's pretty obvious they are, since you break the masks and then they're fine. Right. I never understood that part.
Honestly, I feel like the mask gimmick is always going to be just that.
Oh, we can blame it on a curse, too.
That's true. It is true. That was not one of my favorite parts. Just the curse in general, using the curse as like the generic for everything. I was like, come on.
Indeed.
One other thing that I think we kind of glossed over was Laura's relationship with Kurt. Like, what did y'all feel about that? Like, did they ever like interact with each other like in depth, or like have both of them like acknowledged each other or something?
I can't recall. Actually, that's a good question. You would think
I feel like Kurt knows she is the traveling instructor,
right?
And they go to Parm. I feel like he knows that before you see her.
To Josh's point, though, I don't recall seeing like actual those two chatting at any point, like in game, at all.
Uh-huh. Yeah, seems like they would be.
Yet another missed opportunity.
Yep.
One of the great bonding events takes place on Byronia Island, but I have a bit of a story that I have to tell first, all right? So you guys are free to laugh at this if you want to. But so in the past, we Josh and I haven't told too many personal stories on here. Actually, I think that Lady Virgilia has told more personal stories as a guest than either you or I have. But so I have two things that I have to say first before I get a little bit more into the story. So first of all, I am not 100% ready, probably, to say that I am for sure romantic, but I definitely flirt with the term, pun intended. so that's one thing. The other is, since I was like, gosh, probably like 14 or 15, about every friend that I make, person that I hang out with, pretty much all been women. I don't know what it is, but I just seem to find myself in situations like that. Like, and actually where I work at now, when I first started there, when I was in a different position, the department that I worked in was like me and then like eight women. When I studied in Spain, I lived in a house with four Chinese students who were all women. Just always find myself in that type of situation. Now, put that with the first thing that I just said, and you might be able to see where I'm going with this, but a lot of times, like, obviously, you might not fully expect, but if you have a guy and a girl hanging out a lot, you might think, oh, they must be dating or something like that. It would not be unusual to have one person develop feelings for the other. And so the Byronia Island event definitely was something that I like identified with a lot, because that sort of thing, I've been in that situation so many times, and every time I'm like, oh no, not again. Like it was honestly like a problem for a while. And when I saw Laura push Rean up against the wall, it like launched me into orbit. I was giggling because it's like, oh, I've been in this situation so many times. Like my favorite bonding event of like all of Trails.
Damn.
I'd have to watch that to remind myself what it is. Are you talking about for Cold Steel 4?
That's in 4, wasn't it?
Wait, it's 4.
Yeah.
It's 4. You're right. Excuse me. Yep. It's the best bonding event in the whole series. Objectively, of course.
I mean, I obviously agree.
It's, and the reason I like it is because it's something that's been built up and hinted at, especially if you've been doing her events all the way through. You notice that, for example, the final bonding event in Cold Steel 1, when they're sitting, you know, at the fire, did you notice every single one, she's always the first one that makes the move. She asks him, do you want to dance? She's the only girl that does it too, by the way, outside of anybody else. And so she always makes the first move because that fits her character archetype, because she's, you know, she wears her heart on her sleeve. She'll say what she feels right there. She won't, you know, hold it back. She's not going to just hide it. In CS2, I believe it happens in CS2 as well. So when I see her making this first move again, it totally makes sense. And they just spent all this time on Brennan Island together, just the two of them, both, you know, doing what they need to survive and train together, which they've been really working on their, you know, training their passion for the sword and the art of the sword, and their dedication to it and surviving. And then not only that, but then they start talking about their vulnerabilities together, like, big time. The things that she's struggling with her dad, and he's talking about how he's struggling with his
fears, with
daddy issues, I guess. Yeah. And it's I don't know. Like, I think it totally makes sense that it would all just click, you know, right there, and she'd make the first move. Oh, it was so good. Oh my god. I'm thinking about it right now. I got a big smile on my face. I'm like, oh man, it's just a special moment. And it just all makes sense.
I actually had to, the first time I played Cold Steel 4 and I saw that event, pretty sure that I like blacked out because I was just like being like thrown back into the past to so many different things. And I was like, all right, I think I need to reload my save and start over again because I don't even remember anything that happened now.
Wow. First time you've played Cold Steel 4, so you've played it multiple times now?
I did. I played it on PS4 when it first came out, and then I played it on the Switch when it came out on the Switch.
Damn.
I will always buy everything on the Switch, because the portability is unbeatable.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
That's fair. I use the, I buy everything on Steam, because I just use my Steam Deck if I want to take a portable.
Fancy.
Oh yes, Steam Deck sounds really good. One thing I would like to ask both of you, for I guess this is like sort of stepping away from Cold Steel 4, but we can always go back if, like, you know, it's too like big of a spoiler, but do you think like Laura has there's like some sort of character development waiting to happen with her on Reverie? Well, not saying it's a question.
So since this is going to come out right when Reverie's coming out, I think we should, since actually Feb and I have both played at least Hajimari, we'll have to put a pause on that for the game to come out. Cause I don't know how much you actually played it, Feb. Since I couldn't play with the overlay, I had to just have the spreadsheets open on a laptop. So I was going back and forth. So I had kind of minimal, like, I played it, I went through it, I know the story, but there was a lot of things that I didn't really have access to, and it was difficult for me to get to. So I probably missed quite a bit. So all I was really going to say about Reverie is that she's in the game.
There you go.
Federal riot if she's not.
Well, I know she is, so we're good.
As far as looking forward goes, what do you guys think about, do you think we're ever going to find out more about her mom?
So there is one line that is said about her mom. Did you ever see that line?
I do remember there being a line, but I don't remember what it specifically was.
I don't also remember if Laura has a mom, if she's dead or alive still.
I think it was late mother. I think Victor said late mother when they were in Michelin. They're in Michelin during the part that happens before the finale. And
the beach episode.
Yeah, pretty much, at night though. And yeah, it's that's the only thing we hear about her mom, or I think it's late mother. I could be wrong, and I gotta check. I think that pretty much confirms that she passed, I think.
There's not a whole lot of main characters in Trails that have both parents. I think it's just like Yuna and Tita.
And Gaius.
Gaius, yeah.
Alisa?
Well, kind of.
Also, another thing that we might have missed during Cold Steel 3 and Cold Steel 4, I think it's been pretty much said that Laura looked up to Arian Road or Leanne Sandlot. Hmm. And we face her multiple times in Cold Steel 3 and Cold Steel 4. Is there anything that struck you the most whenever Laura interacts with the Stahl Ritter and Arian Road?
When the most unfortunate thing happens in CS4, the scene that made me get real pissed, when Arian Road falls, essentially due to the Golden Knight, the last words that she said about the S, I think she actually talked about how she was happy that our states were keeping the S in their name. I thought that was pretty neat, but it wasn't like any super heartfelt stuff to Laura specifically. It's more to Rain and a couple others and to the Dubes. Oh, that's another dynamic there that mention the dynamic between Dubes and Laura.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just about to bring that up. I feel like we didn't get a lot out of it, but it does feel like Duvely sort of, I don't know, respects the Arsade or something.
Respects it, but she, I don't know.
Hostility thing going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's Dubes.
Isn't Aura one of the few characters that she refers to by their name? I think she just says the Arsade girl. And anyone else doesn't even get a name.
I didn't even notice that.
Well, I can't wait to play Reverie and get more interactions between Laura and Dubly, because I'm a big fan of both. So I'm just excited to see whatever things they have.
I think you got some stuff to look forward to in Reverie, and I hope that we get to see. I really hope we get to see Laura in the future, down the road, or her dad, or. And see where they've come. Maybe if we ever get a final arc where everybody comes together again or something.
I think so. When Laura turns 30 and she has gray hair already.
Oh, because in JRPGs, 30-year-olds are in retirement.
Yeah.
No, I think that beyond Reverie, I'm not really sure if we I would love to see more Laura. She's a noble, but she's not one of the four great houses. So she's not going to have those. Right. She might have regional duties to attend to, but if we're outside of Erebonia, and I focus at all about that, or can they use the whole traveling instructor of the Arsade school? Is that a branch that we can use?
Yep.
I can definitely see that. Yeah. I mean, in Kuro, as far as I know, we know that Fee appears in it, so there's no excuse for someone like Laura to not appear in it too. Well, eventually,
Fee's got the excuse, not the excuse. She's got the reason, the legit reason that the Bracer Guild is all over the continent, and because she's a Bracer herself, she's out there. But the reason I can see Laura out there is because legit, the Eight Leaves is known all over the continent. So is the Arsade, school and the Vander schools. So I think that that would be one reason that she would leave the country.
Another thing that I wanted to kind of bring up, and you can like edit this to whatever you think it fits, because I feel like we glossed it over. Laura S. R. Say, like, you know, yeah, they kept the Sandlot name of like Leanne Sandlot, but I kind of forget how they're related to Sandlot.
That's because of Roland, not Roland, sorry, not Roland Vander. Their ancestor was, he was just Arsaid. He wasn't a Viscount at all. He was just, he was a soldier that was in the Hundred, not the Hundred Years War, the War of the War of the Lions. With, and she was, he was under, it was like their ancestor from like several generations back served her, and he was there for her doing, like, with her and with, Marine's dad back then, and she honored him by promoting him, pretty much, you know, dubbing him a Viscount. And since then, they've kept the S, you know, in appreciation, and I guess in appreciation. I think that's how they're connected. And then, you know, he passed that down. He kept the S in their name all the way through, and that's why they're Viscounty to current day.
Okay. Because at one point I thought that Laura was also like a direct descendant of Leanne Sandlot.
I don't think they're direct descendants.
Okay.
I think it's just because it's just an honor thing where she, her ancestor, you know, served directly on her.
Okay.
In the War Alliance.
So we kind of talked about this. This is really the last thing that I have to say, unless you guys have anything else to add to. There was a post that someone made on Reddit a while back, Sifra4899. This is kind of something that I brought up earlier. They noticed that the writers positioned Laura in such a way to make her like question her place in this rapidly developing world after you know, all the Orville Revolution and everything. She, you know, she's a traditional swordswoman from an era that appears to be coming to an end, or at the very least, like, changing pretty significantly. And she's struggling to deal with new technology as well, as we see in some of her bonding events. And yet we never really see her be more than a punchline in some of those technological... And there isn't really a solution for the sword to evolve, unless, I guess, they have, like, spurs or something. I don't know. Like, do you think we're going to see more of that question? Do you think that it's something that is going to change? Do you think that's going to be a change in her personality, or something that we see off screen if, you know, maybe we're not going to focus on her as much anymore? Or do you think they're going to, like, abandon it?
I don't think that they're, I mean, I think that question will be, you know, brought up, but I think she's just going to get more confident in her skill. I mean, even today, like, even though wars are fought, you know, today totally different than they did back in, you know, when they were using just swords and shields and stuff. People still go take karate, for example. People still go and, you know, do fencing and martial arts. There's more to the school, you know, the Arsaid school, or a physical, you know, weapon school that's focused on this physical weapon or hand-to-hand, than just the practicality of it in mass, in actual modern warfare. I think it's more about, you know, developing you as a person in throughout the school, and in, especially in the world, the fantasy world we're in with the whole continent. It's, I don't think that she needs, I feel like it's not a problem. I think she's probably questioning it because she's a little discouraged by how she struggles with technology. But I think that she's gonna, I think that she would, you know, mature enough, you know, grow even more to realize that it's always gonna have a place in the world of what's the continent's name? Why am I forgetting the name of the continent?
Zemuria.
Oh, Zemuria. That's it. Yeah, Zemuria. I think it's always gonna have a place in Zemuria, the martial arts, just like it does in modern day, in our modern day world.
That's actually pretty similar to what I was thinking. That she's, you know, she's still young. At the end of Cold Steel 4, she's like 2021. She's still finding who she's going to be, still finding her place. She isn't even, you know, in charge of her house, so to speak. Her dad's still alive and kicking, despite being less than what he was previously. So I think that she's just still finding what it means to her. We've seen how confident she is and how she carries herself. I still think that she's still finding where she, her place in the world and everything. So I think that we won't see, I don't think we're going to see that on screen. There's not going to be a chapter about Laura finding that. We might see something of it in a bonding event or some side quest or something like that. Maybe there'll be something in a, like an in-game newspaper or something like that. Which is kind of a little bit sad, but also that's kind of just the nature of what Trails is going to become. I love Estelle, and I would play any game that had Estelle in it. Like, her story's done. Her story has been told. And, you know, like you said, there's branches of the Bracer Guild everywhere, so she has an excuse to show up anywhere. But it would feel maybe a little bit odd to force into a region or a country where they're not from and don't necessarily have any ties. All right, well, you guys have anything else? I think that is, that's all I have.
I think that's all on my end. Thanks for, I really appreciate you having me on to talk about, you know, one of my favorite characters. Really appreciate it. And hopefully I was able to do right by everybody else, all the other Laura fans out there. So my name is February Knight, and you can find me on YouTube with February Knight with a space in between February and Knight, or you can find me on Twitch. I stream 3 to 4 days a week. Currently playing a mix of games. Right now I'm playing Final Fantasy 16 since it just came out, but I'm also playing Kuro 2 and Honkai Star Rail.
Well, I sometimes lurk on the Falcon subreddit, so you can probably find me. It's Vaniluxite on Reddit. It's also the same Tumblr URL I have, so you can follow me on there, but I don't use Tumblr art all that much.
You can follow me at Trails in the Sky on Tumblr, dash after Trails and before Sky. I don't have a Twitter anymore, so I'm going to have to rely on Josh and Feb to tweet out this episode once it comes out. But yeah, thanks for joining Feb and Josh. It was fun to talk about my favorite characters, and hopefully we'll see. If anyone wants to recommend characters, feel free to get on and send us messages of who you'd like to hear us talk about, and tune in next time.
If any of you guys are looking out for a friendly, active Discord, JRPG Discord with a focus on Trails, feel free to join the server. Love to chat with you in the voice chat or in the text chat. It's discord.gg/February Knight 4.